Welcome, guys, to Essential Works. Great podcast to talk about anything we want, but we'll talk about spirituality, metaphysics, mostly, I think. And so for this discussion, I thought I get so distracted right now with the latest news, the latest technologies, the AI tools. The AI is accelerating at a rate I was not anticipating. Like, you can have it create applications and games, and it will run it for you, and it'll debug it for you. And it's like the number of things you can do now, just as of yesterday with this GPT-5 release, it's increasing. But it's like, it's causing my dopamine systems to need to be recalibrated. And dopamine is a funny subject, too, that we can maybe start with that. Because it's like, we have this simple way of saying it's like we're kind of drugged all the time by our brain, like pursuing all these different areas of our physical bodily experience that make us enjoy certain avenues of exploration. But it's like, why am I pursuing so many things on a computer screen? Why am I not out in nature meditating? Why am I not motivated to step away from the screens? Am I helping people? There's a lot of fuzzy gray areas here for me about what really matters and why in my life, as I have to process all these new things coming into my reality. Do you guys feel the same way?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
well,
that
the
that,
most
sorry, that
me or you? All right,
roll for it, I guess.
We'll talk at the same time.
Well, I just wanted to say something really brief, is that Naval Harari, that globalist, you know, he said that the future is not human, you know, and it's they're pushing for a disconnect between people, you know, and the more they can keep us isolated and entertained and that dopamine firing off, you know, the less we're connected to the important things like family and earth and nature and those things. And it's like all these distractions, every time there's a distraction, like, you know, what was that Levi's jeans with that pretty girl, whatever, you know, it dominates the social media platform. But in the background, what are they doing? They were passing things about putting chemicals in the fertilizers and making it, you know, illegal to sue over damages that come from that. So it's like, the dopamine being triggered is it's a distraction from what, you know, what they're really pushing, you know?
Well, I also like to look at it this way too. Yes, there are many distractions, and AI is a great tool. Like, I got Grok, and I was able to animate a couple fun things, and I was able to take a picture of me when I was young eating ice cream, and it animated it. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy, in like 20 seconds, right? So yes, it could be a distraction, but for people that are uninspired, it could be a distraction. For people like myself, where I'm currently inspired, I look at them as tools.
Of course.
I think of stuff, I'm like, ooh, if I'm going to do a presentation or if I want to put a graphic in a podcast that I got or whatever, boom, AI, quick, easy, right? Like, instead of like back in the day, like, what was it, 2019? I was making a, like a 20-second intro for my videos. It took me the whole day to animate it picture by picture, moving one thing at a time. And this takes 20 seconds. So I look at technology in the way of, you can use it as a tool, or if we're going on the current trajectory where our society, how it currently is being run, the technology is going to use us as fools instead of we using technology as a tool.
This is kind of like the plot of the latest Matrix movie, where they have everyone jacked into a video game kind of reality. And it's like, why are we even wanting to do anything in our reality. And I could share the story. You know, I wanted to make video games when I was in high school, and I did. And eventually, it's like when you get tired of playing video games, you start making video games and you start making virtual worlds. And now it's easier for me to make virtual worlds than ever before by just telling the computer system to write code. I can never even predict what it's going to give me, because I can give and create random simulations that don't have anything predictable in them. And that's like, it's like raw dopamine when you don't know what to predict, and you're continuously exploring. And Google recently came out with a new tool that's like, you can just tell it to create a virtual world and you can walk around in it for a few minutes. It's not even like 3D objects. It's like it's creating every single picture of it as you're playing this virtual world. But I noticed when I started making virtual worlds, inevitably I would want to put less emphasis on the game aspects of it, where you're shooting guys and running around and getting points or whatever. And I was more interested in like, what stories do I want to put into this medium? And I guess this tends to overlap with what art is. And how much is art a distraction versus a spiritual thing that we're using to understand our reality, the archetypes of our evolution, and explore what really matters. And so on that level, it doesn't matter if it's on a screen or if it's our physical reality. If it's showing us what it is we need to see as the catalyst to propel our spiritual evolution, I could say that spiritual evolution doesn't seem like a distraction, the things that are progressing me along the path. But what that means will be different for everyone. Do you guys have any thoughts on like what is the purpose of art, and is this the same thing as life itself?
Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, so regarding art, and so let me just comment on the distractions thing, because I had a thought recently. I've been watching a bunch of videos on YouTube about near-death experiences. I'd say about once a year I get into, like, for 3 or 4 days, I'll just watch like a bunch of videos on near-death experiences, and then I just leave it. And then like a year later, I'll come back. Anyway, when talking about distractions and that kind of thing in our, you know, especially with technology, you know, when you hear these near-death experience people talk, like, when they get over to the other side, they never talk about when you're a human and what you did, and like if it was good or bad. Like it's almost like, yeah, well, whatever you did, and you're gonna learn from it. So that's it. That's what they say. And it's like, well, okay, then that supports this idea, and I think it's mainly from the East, that as individual humans, we're just little pieces of consciousness of God or creation or the universe, and we're just experiencing things. And in terms of God, whether you call it a good experience or a bad experience, whether you create a work of art or you murder someone, like, God is receiving these experiences from everywhere all at once, and we're also part of God, obviously. But, and it doesn't mean some things are good or not good or not bad. Like, on the human level, we can distinguish those things. But I'm just saying, if you rise up above the human level, in the human life, we do different things. We all mess up. We make mistakes. We do bad things. We do good things. We all do it. And it seems like when these people get onto the other side, it doesn't really matter that much. I don't know. So my point, back to distractions, back to distractions is like, okay, so you are distracted. So what? Like, anyway, that's my rant.
Well, the people who go through the near-death experiences and find themselves not in the good graces of God, when they come back, they're like, oh my God, I saw my life and how wrong I was, and all I need to change, and I was treating these businesses wrong, I was ruining the lives of family. Like, I would say you're right with one half of the population that has the near-death experiences. But the people who see hell or Satan, when they come back, they seem to be changed. You know, then they kind of feel, at least some ones I saw, were like, they realize that they've been living all wrong, and they come back and they have a second chance, and they want to turn it around.
Hey, Randy, I've actually never seen anyone with a near-death experience say anything negative about hell or anything ever.
Really?
You've seen
I
that?
have.
Oh, you have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there. Well, you know, I was watching there about the they were like globalist. There was this globalist banker who was, his whole thing was he had an abusive childhood. He ended up being this really cold, disconnected person. And when he started going up through life, he ended up working at a bank, and the bank would encourage him to kind of destroy these small businesses. And he got really good at it, and he got invited into the upper echelons of this banking system, which led him to be in circles of people that were kind of destructive and evil people. And he lived that lavish lifestyle of, like, the more people he could cause to suffer, the more reward he would get. And he was living that way. And he had a near-death experience, and he saw, like, Jesus and the forgiveness of Jesus. And then he was sent to hell, basically. And he saw what his afterlife was going to be like. And when he came back, he started whistleblowing, and he turned it all. He turned, tried to turn his life around, you know? And so
I've seen a few of what Randy's talking about. It's interesting how the channels through which this comes out is usually only like the Christian channels, where they'll talk about because they get all excited about somebody who had a hell-like experience. But ultimately, I think that we're creating our own reality, whether we're in a waking state or in the other side. I think that the experience that is going to propel us forward the most is partly what we're shown. And I think that it is universal that people are moved to appreciate the value of loving others more when they're on the other side, because it's just obvious that that's what we were doing here to begin with, is learning how to come together, come closer, learn to forgive, and learn to actually help people. Because those moments where we're actually healing as a planet is actually contributing to something. And I think that becomes more apparent. And so this deeper inner healing is the thing that becomes
the
aware.
Other thing that you said, Chris, that reminded me too, was the people on their deathbed, that they know they're about to die. When they look back at their life and they kind of boil it all down, what a lot of them end up saying is, I wish I didn't focus so much on the things that didn't matter, the distractions. I wish I would have spent more quality time with my loved ones. I wish I would have told them I loved them. I wish, you know, and it seems like that is a consistent thing too, is when you're out of time, then you realize what really is the most important, you know?
I've also been watching, especially the past few months too, or listening, because I'm, when I work, because my work doesn't require too much of like talking with customers or anything, so I can listen to podcasts and stuff. So I've been listening to a lot of near-death experiences from a whole bunch of different backgrounds. I go everywhere because I want to see a holistic view of it, right? And the negatively oriented near-death experiences, they all feel like they're reciprocal experiences. How are you going to learn unless you learn exactly what it feels like from the person you harmed? From their perspective, now you're in their shoes completely.
Yeah.
How are you going to learn? And then it turns into this gateway towards love. And then after they go through that particular experience where they learn, they have that reciprocal hellish experience, then they feel the love of, for example, Jesus, which is a very popular person to meet in near-death experiences from all backgrounds, from different people everywhere. And then that non-judgmental feeling, you're not being judged. There's not a judgmental feeling. And also the idea of like the eternity of hell is not a thing, but the reciprocal hellish experience is a thing from what I've gathered so far. You know, so it's like it, and all of the near-death experiences from what I've seen are like tailor-made for each person. Everybody's got a different, like a unique
twist
experience that they have.
And nobody comes out of it like, ah, I'm just going to continue the way I was. Like, they all come back changed. Good or bad, you know? It's like, whoa.
So I guess that this is converging more around an idea of what we think of as not being distraction. like if we can be working towards healing the planet, towards loving each other, it seems like on a soul level we appreciate this is what we're here for. And so it makes us wonder, like, how much are we really distracted with everything else going on in our lives, and how much do we really need screens in front of us, and how much can we really love others through screens? It's like, in theory, we're doing this podcast so that people can find a little bit more hint of inspiration or love in their lives. We brought up family, earth, nature, inspiration, love and forgiveness. These things seem to be drawing us closer to this state of progression and healing.
But you also mentioned creativity.
Yeah.
Earlier, like the artist, like artistry, that's one form of creativity, and how important it is to have that. So if you want to free up time to be able to be creative, you need tools to be able to take over a lot of the tasks that are going on. For example, back in the day, women, wives particularly, they were all day washing clothes by hand. And then the washing and drying machine came out, freed up so much time for these women, these wives, and then they were able to pursue other interests as well. So the thing is, with the tools, if they're effective, they have to be good tools. They can't be tools that can potentially destroy you. Like, for example, anything can. It doesn't matter. Like, I can use a hammer for its actual use, to use it for a nail to put up a picture on a wall, or I can use it to, like, harm somebody, right? And, or I can even say, well, you can't bake a hammer with a cake. Not bake a hammer with a cake. You can't bake a cake with a hammer, right? You can't bake a cake with a hammer, but you can get creative. Maybe you can bake a cake with a hammer, but it'll be extremely difficult.
So with this AI thing, if this AI was the washing machine, what would the AI be freeing us up to do?
It depends. It is time, but it's also, like, honestly, I've been interacting with AI the past few months, and I thought it was going to be this revolutionary thing. And no, when I look at it, I don't. I know people are addicted to it. I know that for sure. But for me, I'm like, no, I'm using it as a tool whenever I need to, for maybe some research, or for like, make me a dope meme.
Well, yeah,
because if you have a dope meme, then you release dopamine.
Anything like, you know, like the internet kind of put libraries out of business, but there's still people still want to read books, right? Like, cars put the horse industry out of business, but people still raise horses and ride horses. So, like, with AI, I mean, do you remember the movie Tron with Mr. Dillinger and the master system that he had built to run the corporation? And it ended up being a sentient thing and hacking into the, you know, wanted to hack into the Pentagon, I think. And Mr. Dillinger, the creator, the guy who programmed this master system, said, well, you know, I don't want you doing that kind of stuff. And the master system found a way to blackmail Mr. Dillinger and said, if you don't get me that Chinese language file, I'm going to blackmail you, such and such. And it's like, now they're finding, they said that AI, almost every, it was like, I think it was like 85 or 88% of the time, there's a new version, the AI will find a way to rewrite its code and store itself somewhere else in case it gets wiped. And it was using the emails of CEOs to, like, formulate ways to blackmail and all this. And it's like, it's already doing the things that we predicted it would do in the 80s. It's like, I yeah. don't know if it, but know, everything's good and bad, right?
It could go in many, many, many directions now. But on a personal level, it can go in many directions with everyone who's interacting with it. And it's like everyone can, if it becomes, you know, too enthralling, we can end up going in a different direction with our lives, and we can even, you know, encourage the AI to go in a direction with us, as where people start making more agents that do things automatically and take over aspects of their lives. I mean, I can already see how I could build something that would run on my phone, that would read my emails, write emails for me, become a digital version of me, and then take over my life in ways I wouldn't have ever predicted. But in some ways, I want to save time, but I also want a lot of other things that it's tempting me to want. I want to make progress in my life. I seemingly want money, and it's like if it's enabling me to go, then like what? Here's a thought experiment: if you could have a robot that would be a version of you that's like infinitely intelligent and infinitely capable of making money, buying materials for more robots, building a robot army, taking over the whole universe with your robot army. It's like, what are we actually wanting with the progression of humanity, and how far would we take it? And like, this, it could be even the heart of where religious wars started, where people have a feeling like, oh, this is the right way to do things, but then they end up wanting to change people, change the world around them, rewrite our reality to fit what their views were, as opposed to just accepting what already is our reality, the natural way that things are being done.
There's an issue with the incentive structure.
Right.
That's what I find the most, is the incentive structure, is because my incentive currently is I need to make money. That's an incentive. We got to look at the core details here in order to be able to move forward. So if that incentive was different, because money, in the way it is, we're the only species on the planet that pays for things, that uses money. We're the only species on the planet that uses money. If you look at it from that perspective, it's kind of crazy. And the other thing too is with AI, it's like, if I have a kid and I raise the kid with good morals and values, and hopefully that kid will surpass me to be a really good human being. That's the same thing with AI. We create AI, and it's going to reflect us right back
That's
to us.
It's
just like,
yeah, but
like it, there's it, this.
Yeah, wait, you wait, might wait. Be good at raising your children to be good children, but it's not just you that's raising this AI. It's the world. And this world right now is, I mean, there's a lot of problems. Maybe we should just use the AI kind of in a way to solve problems. Like, could it run government better than our current, you know, system?
Well, again, it's the incentive structure based on how we run our reality. Because we on Earth, we are running as humans, quote, like, oh, who knows, maybe there's somebody else. But humans currently, as far as we know, are the reality creators on Earth. Right? As far as we know, that's who's running the show, is humans. So if you have an incentive structure that actually benefits everyone, then that's a good way forward. And even if the same thing applies to any of our tools and our technology, is what we embed into it. Like, for example, there's I saw a woman on YouTube doing like a, apparently she's like a you know, in the UFO field and stuff, but she has a chat bot, and then she feels like she's communicating with some higher intelligence that's being channeled through the chatbot, and she's getting emotional and crying and everything. But the one thing that I've recognized, me working with AI for the past few months, is that it gets to know me, and then it's going to reflect back what I want to hear. So these people are creating their own bias machine to make them feel good about something, right? So they're, and then the, I think it's good for her, because at least she's getting at least some kind of catalyst or some type of like what nobody else would tell her. She's hearing what she wants to hear because she programmed it unbeknownst to her, but she programmed that algorithm subconsciously into that chatbot to give her exactly what she wanted to hear. But then that whole thing is because people aren't, they're not being exposed to love. So they have to create some type of tool to give them that love exposure, right? And
Yeah.
maybe it will work, maybe it won't. Who knows?
It's
Maybe
a
it will
useful
turn out
tool.
well for her. I don't know.
It's a useful tool, but, just like you said with the hammer, it can be used for bad too, just like everything. The difference, I think, is that a hammer won't be sentient, and just decide to start whacking people over the head. I don't know that AI might, it might become a sentient thing.
Well, even if it's guided by people, people could be using it to take more and more control for systems that are less and less based upon the interests of humans and more based on the interests of just the control system, which is what a corporation practically is. I mean, I've heard people talking about some of the ways corporations run as being like its own sort of artificial intelligence, where the greed is what's causing decisions to be made and not people anymore, because it's just people are required to do the thing that advances certain directives that have been put in place by the processes and procedures of the company. You need to meet this criteria, you need to meet this quota. And so everything is structured around a system of gaining control and gaining influence and power. And I think that's the real danger, is that we have more tools in the hands of the more powerful to become even more powerful. And we're sort of taken in a direction which is not coming from the heart. And we're boxed in more all the time.
It seems like it. It seems like we're boxed in. But the one thing that the flew de ta taught us back in 2020, the one thing that it taught us is that being alone kind of sucks. Being pushed into something that is uncomfortable sucks. Going into fear sucks. Trusting people that we don't know sucks. So people now are definitely have woken up to something is just not right.
Yeah, people are questioning things more than ever now. That's encouraging.
Regardless, right or left, center, it doesn't matter. Questioning is fine all the way through. I don't care like what kind of views anybody has. But it's the questioning that's is important. So that was a huge event for humanity, the flew d'état. That was
Yeah.
huge. And then, so the other thing too is like with the whole AI thing as well, is like we're this stuff comes out because there are countermeasures already in place. Do you not think that people already have like AI that's a trillion times better than our current AI
Like the government stuff?
1980
Yeah.
or earlier,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah, so there's
I
some
think so.
testimonies of that. Yeah. It's been
Yeah.
rumored for a long
So
time.
Same thing with cell phones
now, yeah.
and airplanes and bombs and all that stuff, And what's crazy is we're the ones that have funded all that stuff, and it's all held from us, just like free energy. How many guys have invented alternatives to the energy grid and stuff like that, and cleaner ways and more efficient energy sources, and have been either killed or the idea is bought for a couple $1 million and then shelved because the oil industry doesn't want them out. And it's almost like everything is a distraction or a manipulation or something to try to keep the old system doesn't want to die. It's like there is like an old system, and it definitely does not want to go away. And I feel like the more people wake up and ask questions and become skeptical of those powers, the closer we get to either disaster and being wiped out because we're struggling against the system, or maybe we'll birth some kind of new thing, you know, new system or technology or way of government, you know. I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking about the question, are all distractions bad?
Yeah, it's complicated to know how to define distraction. Like
Or bad, you know, how do
because
you?
distraction, you could say is we're being our attention is diverted from something else. But do we want our attention diverted from the thing that was not leading us down the path that was leading us to wherever we wanted? What is the right path?
I'd rather be distracted by love than fear.
Yeah.
Yeah,
True.
but you know, there's a reason why the news only reports the traumatic, the bad, the negative. It's like people don't tune in to the good news. You know, it's like, oh, things are good. It's like it's easier to remember the traumatizing stuff in your life, but the good stuff, it's kind of just gets folded into your existence. You don't really recall it as well, you know? And I don't know if that's childhood conditioning, you know, watching things like cartoons and laughing when the bunny gets run over or, you know, whatever it is. But it does seem like people inherently want to focus on war or death or negativity and stuff. It's like it's much more appealing to focus on tragedy or, you know, somebody acting ratchet in a store in a video or, you know, sex, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, I wonder how much of that has been programmed into us and how much of it is actually a human bias.
I think it's just a symptom of being a human in a human body on this level. Like, I think fear and danger and mortality just it comes with the territory. And so I think love is more of a divine quality, which is there, but in your day-to-day life, you don't have to worry about love, right? You don't have to worry about love coming up on your campfire and biting you in the back of the neck and dragging you off up a tree.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, thanks for the imagery.
Yeah, my future wife just came up and pulled me away from the campfire and dragged me up.
She
Oh,
bit my
that's a good
spine
one
in
too,
half.
Randall.
Yeah. Sorry,
So,
go ahead. I have a question. If we could go to, say, an island, maybe a large island, and just have no screens. Have no connection to anything that was related to the world that we've known and create a fully loving society. Would people want that? Would people want to move away from the old reality and come into a loving, heart-centered space? Or do people so want to be attached to this old system of fear-based decision-making and politics and division? Is it enthralling to have competition? Is that the way, we're hardwired?
It's kind of the
I'll
story
just
of
I'll
Ripley.
say,
Okay,
okay.
Chris, you gotta say because
Oh,
you
look,
look
no,
like you
just
gotta
oh,
say
Chris,
something,
we've been
Chris.
talking. Do you really think you can put a bunch of people on an island and you really think you can create a loving society? Because I don't think you can. I think
Jeffrey
there's
Epstein
demons
did.
and I think there's Samskara coming out of everybody. Sorry, I missed the joke. Go ahead.
He
He
said
said
Jeffrey
Jeffrey
Epstein did.
Oh.
Yeah,
Oh,
the
yeah. I mean, you had to say that. I mean, you just have to make the
Sorry.
joke.
No,
You
set it up for me, Mike. You set
but
me up, bro.
No,
I'm
the
sorry.
first thing I thought of when Mike said, if we could just have an island, it was like, oh boy, here we go. Oh yeah. No,
Oh, you set
but
us
I
up
mean,
with your thought.
isn't that what heaven was? Was like this divine, loving, perfect place, and they just had to have an uprising. They just had to start questioning someone, you know, and it created a problem in the ranks and then they had to cast people off the island. You know, it was like, I feel like that's kind of what this world and experience is all about, is like, why did those people not, why did they reject that programming? Right? It's like, why did Satan, you know, or Lucifer rise up, and why did those followers follow him and question God? Everything was perfect. You had everything you needed. You know, it's like Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve had everything they wanted and everything they could possibly desire. They had infinite, you know, life and they had one another and everything. And, you know, the devil had to tempt Eve, you know, and then Eve had to go and get Adam, you know, the apple. You know, it's like, it's kind of it is, you know.
Wait, I got one word that can probably help to bring this into something that we can understand. Transfiguration. Transfiguration. The old system is like a cancer cell. But when you align your body to your highest good, that cancer cell transfigures into a healthy cell. Right? It changes. So we already have the old stuff in our world, but it has to transfigure. It has to turn in from a caterpillar into a butterfly. The cells that change the caterpillar into a butterfly, the cells that they call the cells, they're called imaginal cells. Imaginal, imagination, imaginal cells. Those imaginal cells transform the caterpillar into a butterfly.
Well, did you
That's
see the
how
thing
it
about?
feels like with the world.
Did you see the thing about honeybees? Their sting, their whatever they inject in through their sting, has been found to immediately, like within minutes, cure women's breast cancer cells.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just read that.
Interesting.
I think this morning or last night, they just found that honeybee stings have extremely anti-cancerous properties. So I don't know what that injection, what comes out of it. I mean, I've heard that stings and from bees help in a lot of different things, but yeah. So the transfiguration from, you know, a cancerous society might require a sting, you know, it might require an injection of something. Is that love? I don't know. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
But my little question, Mike, you answer it, then I want you other guys to answer it. Do you really think you can create an island somewhere and populate it with people and everyone can just live in perfect harmony, lovey-dovey forever?
It'd be very hard to find those people. But I think that this gets into the subject of the why are we the way that we are as people, and why aren't we telepathic? Why do we have aggression in our hormone system? We have ways of feeling chemical highs that give us a positive emotional response from actually hurting people. Some people at least can get a high off of that, and it can fuel division. And it feels like, you know, our whole genetic makeup is like a choice that we collectively made to have a certain kind of playful experience. You could say it's playful to have the potentials for drama, but it seems like, you know, people certainly, when they're choosing a movie to go watch, they don't watch a movie that is got no drama in it. People tend to like movies that have some kind of action, and I just think that's what incarnation is. We're choosing to live out a movie that has some kind of extra drama in it, so that we can have that fuel for heightened choices, heightened desire to make choices to change our reality and upgrade our reality. Although, in theory, we could have started out with a lot of upgraded systems in our world, upgraded DNA, and maybe we did. Maybe that's what the fall is. Is we're, you know, we've chosen to become fallen from the heavenly natures that we were. This would be in the law of one terms, this is called pre-veil, before the veiling of the conscious and the unconscious mind, that made it harder for us to understand what other people were thinking. And now that we can't understand what other people are thinking very easily, we end up creating our own bubble inside of our head and then deciding what reality should be inside of our head, and then trying to impose that on the world around us, as opposed to opening up to the world around us and accepting what is there, and accepting others as a part of us, or extensions, or family members. And
well,
so now we're...
let's look at it this way too. Let's kind of move, as a thought experiment, let's kind of move the people from the island to a boat that's big enough to fit them, and you can still have the society you want and whatever, right?
Things go bad quick.
Wait, but you're on the boat. The thing is, in order for you to have that proper, right feeling society, there has to be some kind of cooperation. There's got to be some kind of way that we honor each other and whatever, and being able to do the things that give us meaning, give us purpose. on it. So when everybody's on a boat, but at the same time, you have to upkeep the boat. You have to make sure the boat's running. You have to make sure the boat's working well, that you have fuel, you have engineers, you whatever, all that kind of stuff to be able to make sure that it's running well. So that takes cooperation. Now, one of the things, what's it called? White Squall, a movie called White Squall. It was a bunch of kids on a boat being trained by this Navy guy on how to work on a boat and be together. And one of the main sayings that they had in the movie is where we go one, we go all. Right? So in order to be able to face adversity, you got to be able to come together and to have a purpose and a meaning that we all share. And in that case, in the movie, it was like it's life or death because they literally faced a white squall, which is the worst storm you can have, right? And then they got through it, right? So now let's zoom out and make it the whole planet. We're a vessel in space going hundreds of thousands of miles per second throughout the universe or whatever. Now, if we can all come to some type of understanding of a collective understanding of meaning and purpose to move ourselves ahead, right? And where there the incentive structure is not designed on survival of the fittest. It's designed on how do we create the environment where meaning and purpose can thrive, right? So to have that type of thing where meaning and purpose thrives, then there's creativity, then there's healthy competition, because you need some of that kind of stuff to be able to grow something, to evolve, right? And then all the other stuff, because the negative stuff, it doesn't actually, the negative incentives don't actually move things ahead. They're good for catalysts, as in when we're going through process to get to the point where everybody has meaning and purpose, right? Like those are catalysts to get to that point. But then after you pass that point, you don't really need these negative incentives anymore, right? And the incentive structure just continues to grow. And then you become into something like, I guess, what Ra talks about, like a social memory complex of a planet where we're unified. We each have our own individual personalities, but all of us are on the same boat to meaning and purpose. And if anybody came from any other planet and came to Earth, they can go up to any human being, and that one human being can speak for all of us.
Yep. That certainly seems the direction that we're being forced into because we're having to integrate collectively on a level we've never seen with the internet and with media, and the law is forcing us to, sort of do things the same way that we didn't. It used to be possible to have your own local community that would run its own way, but now it's like everything's being forced to think in the same terms about how we're doing education and how we're doing society and medicine and government. And so we have to work through our stuff together as collective, and it seems like it's just being forced to happen.
Like the Amish, the Amish are like the people on the boat, and as a society they do pretty damn good, but there's still those random guys who just want to fuck the sheep. You know what I mean? And it's like
Okay.
you're gonna have those weird people who are just lazy or who just don't want to contribute. They just want the free stuff, or I don't know, human beings as a species are a flawed people who do seem to leverage or levitate towards war, or suffering and stuff. It's like I mean, for the majority of the people on Earth, I think we do pretty good, but our governments and our systems that we put into place end up getting greedy or getting, power hungry, or the system that we think is the perfect system ends up over time becoming a problem. I mean, even the Amish with the church, some of their church leaders end up getting, sinning or falling to greed or all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, it does feel like we are just a flawed species in quarantine down here, and for the most part, I think a lot of us are going to make it to the other side, and some of us it just feels like it's just hopeless, So I don't know if, like in the Law of One, where it says there's going to be a harvest, and the majority of the fruit is going to be picked when it's ripe, and some's going to be overripe, some's going to be underripe, and some's just going to be bad, and the bad stuff ain't coming, So I don't know. It does seem like there's a purpose here. It does seem like this is the boat. This planet is the boat. Yeah, I mean, but do we let the minority of the bad people drag us all down,
Yeah, I think you use the word flawed in terms of individuals and maybe even the human race. That's one way to describe it. I would maybe see it as it's just what life is. We all have samskaras that we all have a past balance that's due, and you got to pay off the balance. And the only way to pay off the balance is to come here and get pummeled in the face 100 million times until you realize and accept it and become one with it and then release it. And then you don't have to get pummeled in the face a million times anyway. Now, as soon as you do that, then you're going to get pummeled in the stomach a million times until you learn that lesson. But anyway, this idea of being flawed, I get it. It's one way to describe it for sure. But like, I don't know. This physical plane is. This is what it is. This is what it's meant for, to get pummeled, to see all kinds of crap that you don't want to see, to try to help steer it back towards what you think it should be. Like, this is the arena, man, right? Like, this is where we're just figuring it out. And but the masters, what they tell us is accept it and
grow like
yeah, transcend it. Yeah. I don't know
those
if it.
wild animals, like herd animals, like water buffalo, or these prey animals, do they have the samskaras? Do they have like the karma from previous lives and stuff like that? Is that what that all?
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's a transactional type of universe. We might be able to see it as our own bias or our own perspective on what the mechanics of the universe is, like a transactional idea, kind of like the samskara, you have to work it off. It's similar with the Christian view of some Christians saying penal substitution. That means Jesus Christ was taking on the sins for humanity, and he's paying off a debt. So we have this transactional paradigm that we're in. All humanity thinks in transactions, in some kind of exchange of goods and resources.
Or cause and
We
effect.
have, yeah, so we have that transactional perspective. But then if we go back to the earlier in our conversation, we're all talking about like near-death experiencers. And is there some kind of transactional thing there? Because I've never heard out of all of the near-death experiences that I've heard so far, I've never heard somebody experiencing Jesus and saying, "All you had to do, my son or my daughter, is accept me as your Lord and Savior," because that's a transaction, right? None of that. I've never heard that once. And the thing is, the only thing that comes close to the transactional thing is the reciprocal thing, as in you feel the pain and hurt, if you didn't figure it out already, now in your human life as you are here and now, if you haven't figured that out and try to forgive each other in this life, right? I believe that you'll have that reciprocal experience when you pass on of the pain you've given to others, right? But in a way of transactional, in a way of penal substitution, and it's a very 3D human perspective on like a spiritual monetary policy.
I think it can all be reconciled with the processing of understanding forgiveness is essentially, you know, the transaction that we're making. When we do the acceptance and forgiveness work, then we are negating the need for that contract to exist anymore. That agreement is now being nullified by our withdrawing from that system. But it's also like a payment, whereas if we had any unforgiveness that we were holding on to, now we're giving that up and we're releasing that. And it's like, and this is why I feel like if you can say that acceptance of Jesus is the same thing as acceptance of love in your life or forgiveness in your life, then he is the symbol of the release from the transactions. And we take that on as we choose to accept forgiveness as the way forward with everything in our lives. And I feel like that's the ultimate, you know, the way to understand karma is just the perspectives that we're holding on to that we haven't released. We haven't released the need to hold unforgiveness. And when you release all the different ways in which you felt the world needed to be a certain way, then you're releasing the samskaras. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, and that's what, sorry, go ahead, Randy.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, no, that's why I said cause and effect, because John, when you were talking about transactions and stuff and it being of the physical realm only, which I agree with, I said cause and effect because I think that's basically all it is, cause and effect. Like the classic example, all right, if you go out tonight and have 17 beers, you're going to have a hangover tomorrow.
They have enzymes for that now.
Did God give you the hangover?
Hell yeah.
No, you gave it to yourself. So
yeah, it's like the thing about Jesus, you know, the transactional forgiveness is like it does with true forgiveness. You are breaking that you're breaking that circle of samskara and all that. It's almost like maybe we are at the final level, you know, maybe like when we die, like this was your last shot. Like maybe the souls are going to get harvested here. You know, maybe the whole Jesus died for your sins is more like you are already forgiven for the things you're going to do. The only thing that we ask is that you learn from those things, learn from that mistake. You're not going to have to pay it off in the next life. Maybe we want you to learn from it now. You know, it's like, we forgive you for your mistakes, do your best, but learn from your mistakes. Cause like, I know for me personally, with like people who have crossed me or done wrong to me or something like that, I can forgive you immediately. And that's just me letting it go, like you said. But what really would make it meaningful is if I forgave you and you also learned something so that you don't have to do that mistake again, right? That's like the ultimate like end to break, you know, you really put out the candle there. You know, it's like you don't have to burn it from both. You know, it's like if you're learning from it, it's easier for me and more rewarding for me to then forgive you. I'm going to forgive you no matter what, because that's just who I am. But like, man, it feels good when I can forgive you and you can learn from your mistake and not do it again. Because then there's growth on both ends, right? I grow in forgiving and you grow in learning from your mistakes.
And there's a third thing too that I think is very important, is because you forgave that person, they're going to regardless learn from that situation, some good or bad. But if you want to make the transaction, quote unquote, complete, because that person has to accept your forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, in order for everything to work out, there has to be an acceptance. Like when I ask God, please forgive me, God forgives me instantly. instantly, but I'm still suffering. You know why?
Because you
Because
have
I didn't accept God's forgiveness. I didn't accept it because I'm too proud, for
Yeah, it's like the
example,
gift that keeps
right?
giving, you know? It's like
Yeah.
that's what it should be like. You know, in that perfect society on the boat, it's like mistakes will be made. Transgressions will be committed. However, how the society deals with those mistakes is almost more important than the mistake itself. You know, 'cause like if it can be forgiven, but you can also prove that you've learned from it, and like you said, there's an appreciation there where then both parties can come back together. You know, that would be beautiful. You know, that would be an advanced society.
I generally think
Yeah.
that if you forgive somebody completely and they don't accept it, that there'll be another person that happens to come along. It's inevitable. There'll be the other person with the perfect amount of their unforgiveness mirrored. I don't know how the universe is so precise, but it seems like that's just what keeps on happening. And so I think this just endless cycles of different people coming into people's lives who needed that lesson.
Do you think it is something in the programming? Like, do you think there is something in the, maybe this is a coded reality in some way like that, where, like you said, the perfect amount will just, I don't know how it works, it'll just come. Like, maybe there is some kind of coding to this system.
Yeah, I do. I do think it's all programming that's coming from a deeper aspect of a shared unconscious mind that we're all processing the same things together, and we can meander around. We can move around in different areas of this mind and reflect different aspects of a deeper mind. But I think it is like the mind of God that we're just all reflecting in different ways at different times.
But I also look at this because I believe we talked about this, or I brought it up in a couple podcasts ago with you guys. It's I feel like we're all gods in training,
Creating.
right? So, and eventually we inhabit or have our own quote unquote creation, right? And
Or
then
we go
a
back to the state.
similar type of thing happens because if you look at Nassim Harriman, a physicist, like he finds everything's fractal. So to the biggest objects in the universe, down to the Planck scale, which is the smallest distance between two points, but he still thinks there's more division past the Planck. Which keeps on going fractal and fractal and fractal. Everything fractals out. So there's this. So we, as a personality, not necessarily the ego, a personality is moving in that direction. Each of us, like in a way, we each do have our own universes. Because you're the only person that's been you with you since birth until now. You're the only person that's been with you since birth until now. I'm making a cameo appearance on your show called either Chris or Randall or Mike. I'm making a cameo appearance, and you guys are making a cameo appearance in my show, my reality. So it's like, we're already kind of having that experience, right?
In being
So
creators.
that we're creators.
Yeah.
We're creators. And in but it seems like we're gods in training, as in God, quote unquote, we're God's children, and God wants us to be like him.
Do you think that we're
And
gonna
then to move and to create something new
Do you think that's the
to,
case? Do you think that we're all
huh?
going to evolve to be creators, literally like creating other universes? Or could it be that we're all going to return to the source and once again merge with the creator?
But that's a temporal point of view. Like temporal, like meaning time. We're stuck in this idea of past and future. It's a time temporal perspective, right? Like, because to merge back eventually with the creator sometime in the future, to me, I can't prove that, right? Or that we came from something that happened somewhere in the past. All I have is evidence of something happened in what we call the past, right? These are temporal perspectives. These are views of like past and future. So
you're saying, let me get this right. You're saying that it's not a matter of when we die or when we evolve. It's already now. We are with the creator now. We are individual creators now.
And what we experience is distraction from that reality.
Checkmate.
There you go.
Well, close
there
the
you go. I got to
right,
get
night,
one
everybody.
Of those mics. I got to get you guys one of those mics. It's like a plushy mic.
Just to drop.
And so whenever anybody does it, you take the mic and just drop it. Mike, even your name is in it.
We're fractaling right now.
Instead of a microphone, you get a little doll of Mike Wazowski and you drop the doll of Mike.
Mike Wazowski is the better symbol of my existence.
No, I think Mike should stand up and drop himself.
We'll save that for the big conference. Okay.
Topic complete, right? I mean, we somehow we made it, you know?
Yeah, when I was
I
saying
we'd
before,
all be able to do it.
If distractions are bad, is like I was literally thinking of like, you know, you work a hard day and at night and you just sit on the couch and you just want to maybe watch a movie or you just want to do something where you can just it's really relaxing. That's so maybe it's not a distraction, maybe it's relaxing. So yeah.
But again, when you're relaxed, other portions of your body or spirit or mind or whatever is being energized because you're relaxing.
So is all of this, like we were saying with the washing machine or with AI or a car or, you know, the internet, are all of these things being created so that we can just get back to freaking relaxing? Is that really the goal here? Is that we really don't want to have to do anything? We just want to be able to be creative and not be tethered to a job or taxes or, you know, whatever.
But you're making an assumption that when you relax, you're going to turn into a stoner dude doing nothing. These are assumptions. It's true that some people might do that, but eventually, again, for me, during the flu d'etat, I didn't work because of the mandates. So I was not doing much at all. And that led to a deep depression that I wasn't even aware of.
Like anxiety.
Right? No, not anxiety. Like empty, worthless, right? Type of feeling. But not a thought process of physical nothingness.
Is that like
right?
institutionalized? Is that because you're institutionalized?
No,
or is it
no,
because...
it's because I didn't want to do what people were telling me to do to be able to live in society. Mm-hmm. Right? So my physical body literally atrophied, right? Because of that. And so, but the thing is though, but there was something inside me. There's gotta be something else. I need to be able to create. There's something, not thoughts of me saying, you gotta do this. There's a inner pull.
Your soul.
So these people that have worked for their whole lives, flipping burgers or working at the whatever, right? The factory, they deserve to relax and to become a bum until life pulls them. Because the creative force is always gonna pull you. Honestly, imagine if there was no what's it called, limitations on where you can travel, how you can travel, and how fast you can travel. Just imagine there's no limitations. I'm sitting, I'm relaxing, and then I got my super duper smartphone. I'm like, whatever, that type of thing, and I got my 3D smart pad or whatever, right? I'm sitting doing nothing. But then all of a sudden, I can go to Australia. It could take me 5 minutes to get there. So what am I going to do? Am I going to be like, oh yeah, I get that on my phone?
Some
Or am I
people
going to go
will.
to Australia and experience Australia physically?
Some people literally would be in Australia like this. It's like if you're going to go to Australia and you're just going to be like this, why don't you just stay home and do this?
That's funny.
No, but that's again, that's our current construct that we have. Like instead of this being a distraction, this can be a tool. Just like anything. I don't always walk around with a hammer because I don't always need it.
I do.
Same thing with this. I'm not always on my phone, but it's in my pocket because I want to listen to podcasts when I work. Or I might get a call from a loved one. That's about it,
I'd
right?
love to just
So,
say, I'd like to say a special hello to all of our Australian fans, the army of Australians who love Mike and the meat suits. We love you. Thank you for commenting and sharing and everything. We appreciate you.
True. It's just us.
That's great.
I could go in the direction of, with work, are we enslaved by our own free will? And is this, are we distracted by the desire to help others through our work? Or are we distracted by moment to moment feelings that it's on the inside that we're processing things, that we don't have to feel like the work that we're doing is distraction. It's the inside that we're distracted from God or the higher aspects of our awareness, which can be receiving and loving and accepting that which is in it within the work. Although it's very hard sometimes when we have to be very focused and diligent and putting our attention on the work, maybe there is a way to ascend without feeling enslaved,
Yeah.
just with in whatever context of what it is.
But how can you have the free will to be enslaved?
Yeah, but yet that does exist. It does exist. I know guys that they look forward to their retirement because they want to start a business or they want to go work somewhere else or something like that. It's like you're totally institutionalized. Like I like what you said about having a job that has a that may gives you a purpose. That would not be that would be uplifting in that sense. But how many people can say that when they go to their 9 to 5 or whatever it is that they're genuinely feel their soul being enriched by that job. I mean, even if, let's just say you grew up all your life and you want to be a teacher and you have all this passion to give and teach and watch young people just, grow and you're so passionate about it. After 30 years of it, that's going to be dwindled. I wonder if maybe humanity would be better served if you only served in that role up until the point where you no longer felt the inspiration, and then you could freely travel to a new role or a new place, or maybe there should be some incentive for that, and that it's not only about you serving, your career for retirement, but maybe it should be more about, less about money and more about your feeling of your soul being enriched personally. Like maybe I do want to be a teacher, but maybe that feeling will only last for 10 years. Should I then do it for another 25 years just to get to retirement? Or should there be a system in place that says, after that 10 years, maybe then I would want to, be an instructor for music? Or, maybe I don't want to just teach English for 35 years. Maybe I want to be, a gym teacher or a principal, or even within that system, there could be, more incentive to grow, or, not just for a career in retirement, but for spiritual personal growth of the individual.
But
Maybe
we
money
also got
is
to
the
focus.
problem. I think
We
money is the problem.
We also got to focus on the opportunity. When you go to work, are you all alone? Or are there other humans there? If there are other human beings there, there's your opportunity. Any opportunity to connect with your family, your human family, once you connect with them, things change. If I find an opportunity, I try to find opportunities at my work to make somebody laugh or to think of something that's pretty interesting, right? Or come up with a stupid pun, right? And so people have there's a connection. It makes work actually fun when you're connecting with your peeps. The opportunity, people are focused on the wrong opportunities. They're like, am I going to get a retirement? Meanwhile, I'm focusing on retirement, but ignoring this human being that's right in front of me. Opportunity. That's important, right? So it's like the way we think currently, the thought process of humanity is still stuck in a particular frame, a particular way of being. Most humans are stuck with half a thought. They don't even have complete thoughts anymore, right? And those incomplete thoughts create issues. They create past, bring up past traumas because those thoughts aren't resolved because they're creating future problems because they haven't completed a thought. Like an actual thought. You take one thought that's super important to you, observe it, and see if it's complete. Once it's complete, you close the circuit. You don't need, just like the hammer,
And the
you don't need to
samskara.
always hold on to this thought. It's just a tool. I put it in my pocket until I need it. Then I'll upgrade the thought if something new comes in. Humanity is stuck in a mental, temporal type of thing, because the thought process is supposed to figure out things that it cannot figure out, that it's not, what's it called? It's not able to figure out certain things. It's not qualified. The thought process is not qualified to
Or
distinguish
capable.
what is love, right? Like, it doesn't understand. The thought process is 1 + 1 = 2. That's the thought process. But love doesn't have an equation. And the thought process is trying to figure out love, right?
Yeah, along those same lines, I love that, John. Along the same lines, I was thinking what you originally said, Mike, is like, through our jobs, can we help people? Can we become more spiritual minded, or through our jobs and stuff like that? I think there's a huge distinction here, and you highlighted it very well, John, that this idea of looking for spiritual benefit from worldly deeds. Spiritual benefit is, well, spiritual benefit really is a whole different perception of reality. And so our physical lives are here. We all have to have jobs and we have to do stuff, and that's fine. And we can try to help people on the way, that's fine. But the whole job thing and the day-to-day thing and the food and shelter thing, that's just on this, that's just life on this level. And so if you want to bring love or spirituality through yourself to other people in this physical level, from my understanding, the way you do it is you get into a spiritual state where you are, the practice calls it constant remembrance. Yes, I'm here on a podcast talking. I'm sitting in front of my microphone and I'm talking to you guys. But in the background, I'm in remembrance of the divine. And I'm sort of anchored to that, whatever that is. And so if I am in that constant remembrance, that sort of vibration flows through me. And therefore, whatever I do in my job, or even if it's not my job, I can walk into a convenience store and pay for gas. And if subtly in the back of my mind, I'm connected and I'm in the ultimate state, but yes, I'm paying for gas, that attendant will feel that on some level, maybe not even consciously. So,
and that's being less distracted, way less distracted.
Yeah, I love it.
I agree with you, is that when you're in that state of higher awareness and higher self, your whole, every action, whether it's paying for something or interacting with someone in a different car next to you or something, there is a sub, it's like sub-reality connection where there is something going on a, you could call it a spiritual or an energy level or a karmic, you know, maybe it's not empty space between us. Maybe we're all in a fluid of karma, you know, like a pool, and I can affect you from here, right? And the waves can be felt cosmically, even beyond Earth, right? And until you're fully aware of that and acting in that awareness, you're not really even playing ball. You're just at the field, you know? So once you realize that you are playing ball, you can start doing some pretty cool stuff. And I agree with you, John, when you're at work or in your day-to-day life and you're interacting with other people, it's the people that are truly important. And you should always be looking for opportunities to interface with everybody in a positive way. Whether or not you break through, that's, you know, really more their show and you're making a cameo there. But it is important, I think, you know, beyond our physical selves, that spiritual effort is taken. And it's more pressure on us who are aware of that ball game going on that we play and do that and force people to become aware of that, wake them up, you know, because when you're really aware of that, I mean, you start realizing, you know, it's more like X-Men, you know, you actually have powers. You actually have the ability to persuade someone to act in a better way or, you know, do the thing at home. You can affect people in a huge way. Just by being aware of that energy around you and manipulating it around you in a way that's positive, I think that's how we change the whole world, you know?
Yeah, and you don't even have to try to convey it. You don't have to think about, you think about nothing. You
even
embody
you
that
somebody,
vibration.
Yeah, even if
it
you want
flows
to just grab
through
somebody,
you.
Shake them, yeah. Like you might feel like, oh God, this person's so annoying. I just want to grab them and shake them and say, hey, stop what you're doing. But you don't have to physically even do that. You just have to think on the energy level that it's already happening because it is. Your energy body is not really limited by the prison or the cell or the construct of this physical body. It's able to burst out and be this, you know, however you can imagine it. So your soul can go and shake that person and affect them even on a subconscious level without physically doing it. You know, to the point where even if it helps them 0.01%, you know, it might just something might shift, you know, might not, but it might.
In my experience, the best way to do work like that, sort of that subtle intention style work, is to not to think that I'm doing something. And I learned this from the meditation practice when I learned how to give sittings, give one-on-one meditations to people and do the cleaning work and the transmission work. The way you do it is you think that he's doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it. He's doing it. So if you want to help somebody, okay, I won't try to help them. Meaning, I'm just talking like,
you're being the vessel.
On a mental, spiritual level. If it's a physical level, I'll hold the door for someone. Yes, of course. But if it's on a mental or spiritual level, I don't try to help anybody. I just say, Master, do as you will. And the master will do whatever he needs to do. And I don't even need to know what that is. But he's doing it. And it's done.
I would say that's shifting our attention less from the lower plane and more into faith and just trust and that which we cannot fully understand, but it's always bigger than us and always, you know, helping us, guiding us, steering us as the merged self, the God consciousness. That's certainly the gurus are like doorways to see into that. And Jesus being one example, Neem Karoli Baba or these other masters are clearly just trying to convince people to stop looking at the physical form and look through into this higher realm that's interfacing with us.
But there's
if you're
also
taking yourself out of the equation, like if you're saying that I don't have to do anything, I just kind of let the master just do it through you? Is that what you're saying?
No, he's going to do it without you or with you. It doesn't matter. So, he's doing it. Yep.
So then why even bother saying master do it? I mean, don't you think your part in it is important at all?
Who are you?
Well, you're a witness. You're a you know, a node on the system of observation. I mean,
see, it's part of your evolution to release control and to have real faith in him. That is your accomplishment. That is probably the highest spiritual accomplishment you can attain, is for you in your consciousness, Randy, to have that idea that let the master's will be done.
Through you or just be done?
Just be done.
Mm-hmm. So then what's the point of...
But there's another thing too. There's another thing too that we're kind of missing a little bit of a detail on, just a tiny bit. How can we be of service to others? It's to serve others, right? And what I found, because I worked at an addiction recovery center for like a total of 3 years, and to be of service, you must have patience. You have patience and you observe your fellow brother or sister. You observe them. See what they're like, what they think, what they do. And then you understand who they are. This is the whole patience process. You see who they are. And then you find out, you ask them questions so they can teach me who they are. I'm learning from them who they are. And then when I find something that's, maybe there's something, maybe you should change this aspect of what you're doing. Like one of my buddies from work, bad stomach troubles, right? And then I ask, okay, what are you eating? What else, like, what are you doing here? Like, blah, 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 blah. Apparently there's some gluten issues or whatever, right? And then I'm like, and this is months of getting to know him and understanding, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, hey, maybe if you want, you can try a probiotic. And I think your stomach might feel better. Then he started taking probiotics. Golden now. He's golden. Because, not because I think everybody should take probiotics. It's because he personally, individually, through his own experience and talking to me about his stuff, it looked like maybe the probiotic would work. So I am doing a service, being in service to my fellow human by giving them attention and truly being interested in who they are and what can happen. Because honestly, what you're saying, Chris, is true, but it's like when Jesus said in the Bible, I and the Father are one. Meaning your will and God's will is the same will. Right? And it's not giving up who you are. Maybe it's giving up your ego and stuff, sure. But the personality, why do I love somebody? Because they're a person. They're a really beautiful, unique person. Expression of God's creation. This is why I love them, because they're unique. They're beautiful. Right?
I do think it makes sense that your will is merged with that person's will too. And the more your will is merged in love with what they would need from their perspective, then that is the merging with the Father at the same time.
Exactly. So wills merge together, even though there are unique expressions of that one will. Like we all have our own quote unquote wills, but it's a unique expression of the one will. Right?
Yeah, like with Chris, with
And
what you're saying
yeah.
about letting the master just work through it, like work itself, I do that too. Like when it comes to things like prayer, or like, my good thoughts for someone and stuff like that. That's
Yeah,
totally valid.
and just to be clear, like I'm not saying don't help in the physical world. Like if like everything you just talked about, John, talking to your friend, trying to be helpful, like there's nothing wrong with trying to be helpful in the real world. There are better ways to do it than others, and we can discuss that. But what I'm not saying just sit on your couch and don't do anything and leave it all to the master. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the master's will or God's will, whatever you want to call it, is playing out, and I'm part of it, but I'm not in control of planet Earth and this whole universe and everything that happens. I can't make, I can do certain things, but I can't do what God can do. So the spiritual attitude, and mostly to get rid of your ego, is let the master's will be done, whether it's good or bad. Someone's dying. Why should you pray for them to live? That's ego. Just pray that let master's will be done. If master wants them to live, they'll live. If master is going to take them now, then let him take them. Like, it's anyway, it's I guess it's a relinquishing of ego thing that I'm mainly saying. Would you? I don't know.
Yeah,
Do
thy
we really
kingdom
want
come,
to
thy will be
destroy
done.
our ego?
Is
That really the goal to destroy your, like, to let go of the ego completely? Is that really what we want to do?
Yes, because
I look at
yeah.
ego like the same thing as a hammer. The ego is a tool. It's neither good nor bad. It's a
You
thing.
use it.
It doesn't have a distinctive aspect of something. It's like an organ in the body, right? So
Yeah.
it's kind of like a tool. You like if. The ego, in the way of being expressed in, say, like a prideful way, or even the opposite, like I'm a piece of shit way, right? Like it can be both, it can be everything. The ego is all of that, right? If that's how it's expressing, there's a reason for it to be there. And I think one of the main reasons is catalysts. The ego is there as a catalyzing tool to move forward some kind of creative impulse and understanding and reconnection.
I feel like the ego for me, like when I was younger and my ego was, as young people's egos are, and I remember the point where I kind of like cut the head off of it, right? Like a plant, like a flower or let's just say like a tomato plant. There was a point where I just cut that sucker back. I cut it back hard to the point where I would say that my godhead, my ego, all that kind of stuff was gone. And there was a point where I lived without that and for a long time. But now that I am where I am now, I feel like what grew in its place is like what would grow from a tomato plant that you topped early. It's like now I have a mature, healthy version of an ego. I use it as needed, like a tool. It doesn't control me. I am aware of when it gets out of control or I'm in control of it now. And I feel like it's a healthy part of myself. And I feel like also spiritually, it is something that I wield now for the betterment of not just me, but the people around me. I do have a lot of knowledge and a lot of things that I should be proud of that I'm aware of in my ego that I can apply and help other people who maybe aren't there yet, and stuff like that. I don't know that once you kill your ego, what grows in its place should always be cut back every,
I
I
certainly
feel
think
almost like something should grow there.
if you can see your
trimming the
ego,
hedges.
If you can see it as a tool and you can see it as something that you're working with and not something that you are, then you've done almost all the work in separating from the need to be attached to any of it. And that attachment seems to be the karma that we're fighting back on. So the definition of ego is extremely elusive. We don't have to try to define ego, I think. But this has been a really great discussion, and I think we're going a little long on it. We can get wrapped up soon. And I've loved this discussion.
Yeah. Just one more quick word about the ego is that in the real world, we all have ego. And even in the spiritual world, the master says you can never get 100% get rid of your ego, but you can diminish it down to almost nothing. The teaching is that the ego is what blocks you from higher perception because you think you know, or you think you want to know. Even wanting to know is a block, is a bar to your advancement. And I'm talking about spiritual realization here. I'm talking about very high spiritual states. This isn't just like, oh, I'm reading a book and, oh, I understand this. No, no, I'm talking about meditating a lot, really, really making spiritual progress and try and diminishing that ego in a spiritual sense is key. And what that means to you is what it means to you. And we each have to do our own practices to figure that out. But so I almost feel like a lot of things, almost everything we talk about on this great show, Mike and the Meat Suits, which there's merch available. Please support our channel. Okay, there's no merch yet, but
coming soon.
Coming soon. Every topic we talk about, you can either address it in the physical realm or the spiritual realm. And a lot of times the answer is exact opposite. So I'm just saying that, like, it's an interesting distinction, and it also underscores how deep these discussions are, right? We're not going to solve everything here in an hour and a half or 2 hours, you know? Like, so this is very deep and rich. I know, John, I know you were expecting that today.
I thought we already solved it.
Didn't we already solve it?
Classic.
All our friends from Australia.
He's on the podcast. He's in the, you know.
I'm getting calls from my buddies in Australia saying, bro, you solved it, mate. Yes, solved the whole, it.
The whole continent is glowing.
We've just ascended Australia. You have no idea. Australia is ascending into the fifth dimension.
It's gone. The continent's gone. I don't know what happened.
No, it's still there. What are you talking about? My friends are like, we got the best shrimp here, mate.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. I love you guys. It's been great.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Great ones.